Chapter 13, The BBC Against Ladysmith. Pursuing Truth for the License Fee Pair. This chapter charts and explains what happened when the BBC decided to challenge Ladysmith's very obviously unlawful restriction orders. Remember Employment Tribunal Judge Whitcomb's questions of Brian Napier KC in Chapter 12? I obviously had an interest to be represented in this case, didn't I? The BBC won the right to publish my note dated the 1st of April 2019, as well as the details set out in my 2019 Employment Tribunal claim for disability discrimination against Ladysmith. The chapter highlights that, although the BBC won the appeal, the note and the ET claim details were never published. I ask the question, why? The chapter goes on to anticipate the consequences for me and for the continuing and urgent need for fearless and thorough investigation of organised child sexual abuse and child trafficking allegations in Scotland. This chapter also raises other vitally important issues in relation to the rule of lawyers as opposed to the rule of law. It describes court procedures which featured manipulation of the law in order to conveniently cover up serious issues about allegations of organised child sexual abuse and trafficking of children in care. The case was allocated to Lord Boyd of Duncansby at first instance. Lord Boyd is a close and long-standing associate of Lord Hardy, the subject of part of the note. Lord Boyd should not have heard this case, nor should the Lord President, Lord Carloway, on appeal. Nor should Lord Pentland, Paul Cullen, QC. All knew about the note or important details in it. This chapter describes what can happen in the Scottish legal system at the highest levels to make proceedings appear to be in order. What was actually happening was corruption in action. Ladysmith was absolutely determined that no one should be able to publish the hideous detail of my 2019 disability discrimination claim against her. She knew that the BBC had the detail of my ET claim against her, including copies of the supporting documentation, the evidence. Every word in the claim could be proved by reference to available documentation, which is still available. Ladysmith also knew that I'd had various discussions with BBC Scotland journalist Andrew Picken, among others. Just after I began my Employment Tribunal case against Ladysmith in July 2019, I'd recorded an interview on the banks of the Tweed at Peebles with the BBC correspondent who covers the Scottish borders, Cameron Buttle. The BBC then appeared to be really interested in the aspect relating to Ladysmith's sheer, brazen viciousness and lack of ability to act as a normal, compassionate human being towards me when I was diagnosed with and suffering from cancer. Ladysmith's unlawful restriction orders remained in force, however, until they could be declared to be unlawful by a court with necessary jurisdiction. She reminded the world that she was to be obeyed in SCAI press releases issued through the Lowlife 3X1 media group. This is simply and straightforwardly an example of fairly blatant corruption and abuse of statutorily conferred powers which were being used for purposes other than that for which they were given, i.e. the investigation of historical child abuse. In fact, Ladysmith was using those statutory powers to prevent me from telling to the world what happened to me and that she was refusing to investigate serious allegations relating to the organised sexual abuse and exploitation through trafficking and prostitution of children in the care of the state in Scotland. Was it to cover up for those identified in the note? Or was it just that the sexual and other abuse of children in care didn't matter as much as the horrendous abuse meted out to children in private schools? The latter aspect appears to have become the SCAI's primary focus by late 2022-23, at least in the media. This is at least partly as a result of Ladysmith's ill-conceived attempts to assert her authority with a group of eloquent survivors of abuse at Edinburgh Academy and Fettes private schools. After I'd had to abandon my first Employment Tribunal claim against Ladysmith at the end of 2019, I was very much interested in the possibility that was discussed with me by Picken about the BBC challenging Ladysmith's restriction orders by an application for judicial review. I couldn't afford to do this, and although I'd recovered from cancer, the whole process of taking Ladysmith on in 2019 was fairly traumatic. I continued to be absent from practice on an exempted absence granted by Gordon Jackson as Dean of Faculty at the start of November 2016. Also, I hadn't earned any income since 28th October 2016, when I did my farewell sitting as Sheriff at Selkirk Sheriff Court. In addition, the Lord President, Carloway, was now breathing down my neck with an unlawful judicial disciplinary tribunal. It's still ongoing now, disciplining me for telling the truth about Lady Smith's corrupt conduct. A kangaroo court, if ever there was. I felt under pressure. In retrospect, the process definitely appeared to be the start of the monstering process. The othering process may have really ended when I was unable to access the rights that everyone else is entitled to by law. Not only that, but Ladysmith was at liberty to proclaim her exculpation to the world at large. Which she did. You should have a look. The popular conclusion would inevitably be that I'd done something wrong, which wasn't true, and or that I'd wrongly accused Lady Smith of doing something wrong, which wasn't true. The truth was that Lady Smith had acted unlawfully and abused her statutory powers given to the panel of the SCAI for the purposes of investigating historical child abuse in care contexts. So I was very interested in the BBC doing the decent thing as I saw it, by challenging Lady Smith's restriction orders. The BBC was a sufficiently powerful and well-funded organisation to be able to do that. It would be good for them to show that they wouldn't be pushed around by Lady Smith. Also, the implicit attraction for me was that the BBC would finally be able to publish the details of my 2019 Employment Tribunal claim. I'd also had extensive discussions with Pickin about the note for SCAI dated 1st of April 2019. Pickin and many, many other Scottish and UK journalists had seen and read it. All were interested in its contents. Pickin always struck me as quiet, reserved, intelligent and considered bloke. Careful and cautious. There's no doubt at all that he knew the difference between the Employment Tribunal claim details and the note. At all times and in all discussions I had with him, over a period of years, I discussed various aspects of the note with Pickin over the years between May 2019 and summer 2022. There was no scope for confusion, not in 2019, nor in 2020 when the BBC raised proceedings against Lady Smith, nor in April 2021 when the BBC lost before Lord Boyd at first instance, nor on and after 23rd of February 2022, when the appeal was determined in the BBC's favour, quashing Lady Smith's restriction orders and declaring them to be unlawful, clearing the way for the BBC to publish the details that they'd won the right to publish, the 2019 Employment Tribunal claim details and the note. Except the BBC never did publish. Why? The note for SCAI dated 1st of April 2019 hadn't actually been part of the 2019 ET papers. It was referred to in the pleadings but hadn't actually been produced. However, in the face of the restriction orders, it was caught. This effectively prevented me, Pickin or anyone else from talking about the note in public. You'd never know until you actually did it. Of course, Lady Smith would have been delighted to be able to make a referral from the SCAI for a finding of contempt in relation to a breach of one of the three restriction orders. Can you imagine the groupthink? The first hearing of the BBC's application for judicial review took place during lockdown. The world had changed and priorities had to be reordered. I spoke to Pickin by phone after the hearing. He'd been present. The first hearing took place in open court. Anyway, Pickin and I discussed, before and after the first hearing, the allocation of the case to Lord Boyd of Duncansby. I remember feeling deeply disturbed, almost alarmed when I heard this. Colin Boyd is the closest, long-standing, publicly recognisable friend, political associate and ally of Lord Hardy. Hardy's successor is Lord Advocate too. Google them. For the system to be so brazen as to permit this judicial review to be heard by Lord Boyd was very deeply disturbing to me. The right judge, yet again. Everyone knows Lord Boyd is close to Hardy. It's one of those great open secrets in Parliament House in Edinburgh. Lord Boyd was Solicitor General for Scotland when Hardy was appointed Lord Advocate by Tony Blair's New Labour government in May 1997. Given that the Jamie Coulthart case was in court in February 1997, it was like handing the big bad wolf not only the keys to Grandma's house, but also to the cupboards and safe too. Anyway, Lord Boyd didn't recuse from hearing the BBC's application for judicial review. He wasn't even asked to recuse by either party. Astonishing, to my mind at least. The BBC was represented by Kenny McBrearty, QC. Ladysmith was represented by Roddy Dunlop, QC, the then Dean of Faculty. Dunlop was elected Dean in July 2020 after various public and embarrassing shenanigans reported in the media concerning Gordon Jackson. Dunlop was the only candidate who stood. Dunlop's election as Dean marked a sea change in the faculty's attitude towards me. Jackson had attempted to be supportive in a sort of sheepish way in the face of Ladysmith's all-conquering magnificence. He had met with her on my behalf on 7th of December 2016 when I was ill. I really appreciated that. Dunlop was a different entity entirely. Destined and anointed before time began to the office of Dean of Faculty. Dunlop and I share the same devil master, Andrew Smith, KC. Dunlop is also in everything. I mean, he's instructed in many, maybe even most, of the important cases and inquiries that are determined in Scotland. Or, as Dean, involved in discussions about every aspect relative to the Scottish legal establishment and beyond, articulating Ladysmith's abuse of powers in a manner that suggests that what she's been up to is perfectly legal and entirely correct, reasonable, and consistent with the rule of law being applied. By so doing, oiling the wheels of corruption, usually expressed with trappings like lest you think that blah blah blah, using obscure words like cavil and misappropriated dodgy Latin, ad feminem. Typical advocate with whistles and bells, and all over Twitter, he's coming at you. When I spoke to Pickin in the days following the first hearing, he explained to me that my note for the SCAI dated 1st of April 2019 had been referred to in open court. This confirmed in my mind the blatant, open secret nature and extent of corruption in Scotland. Pickin was present in the court of session. Absolutely shocking. The note contained details relating to Lord Hardy and the need for investigation into his sexual conduct towards children. Yet this petition was to be determined by one of Hardy's closest known professional associates. Surely a legal system, no matter how small by population, must be guaranteed to have sufficient structural integrity to ensure that a situation like this is not permitted to occur. The alternative to structural guarantee is reliance on personal integrity. By its nature, that model is only as effective as individual standards. Those are borne upon by personal interests, relationships, such as here, and much, much more. The principle of apparent bias explained in ex parte Pinochet. Anyway, just ignored here in the usual way, as if there was no question of it being relevant. It's a tried and tested modus that's been used at all times in relation to my note. Never, ever even referred to, its existence never acknowledged in any proceedings. A whole legal system in denial. Or covering something up. The Metropolitan Police operating and pursuing an investigation in East Lothian and Edinburgh in 1996. Trafficking of young people for sexual exploitation. The BBC News item reporting Lord Boyd's judgment can be found online. If you can manage it, Lord Boyd's judgment itself can be read. You can look on Scottish Court's website. You'll note that I was not a party to this action and my interests were not represented in any way. This is a matter of great importance to me. Would the reasonable person be content to have their personal medical history and details discussed in public forum in a court action between two public authorities and heard before a third public authority, namely the court? Lodged in court as part of an agreed joint bundle of productions? I think not. The ultimate othering in important respects. My cancer was discussed by the Dean of Faculty, in other words, in open court, and by an official with a public function and particular duties owed to me in relation to my welfare. There's much in Lord Boyd's judgment that I'd take exception to and that is frankly untrue. But my interests weren't represented. be in no doubt at all. This is a snapshot of corruption at work. Take just one example. The employment tribunal proceedings brought by me in 2019 were not raised against Lady Smith as chair of the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry, as stated by Lord Boyd. Napier, on Lady Smith's behalf, actually asked and was allowed by Employment Tribunal Judge Whitcomb to have this amended into my claim. Unheard of, corrupt. As a matter of law, a claim under the Equality Act 2010 can only be brought against an individual, a person in law. Lady Smith is a person in law. Lady Smith, as chair of the SCAI, is not a distinct person in law. Also, in Lord Boyd's judgment, the parties, i.e. not me, were agreed that the sensitive material shouldn't be in the public domain. It's not clear what sensitive material is being referred to. Is it my cancer? Or Lady Smith's blatant and compassionate bullying behaviour? Or perhaps more likely, is it the detail in the note about Lord Boyd's mentor, corruption at work, and all dressed up in the language of protecting survivors of child sexual abuse? Lord Boyd even accepts Dunlop's invitation to found on the opinion of a psychologist. What a joke. She works for the SCAI. Anne McKechnie is not independent of the SCAI. And I produce a tweet from Anne McKechnie which bears this out. It's referred to in the text of the book. Lord Boyd attempted to shore up his judgment by hiding behind the trauma caused to victims of child sexual abuse. It's repugnant. Lord Boyd's judgment's an excellent example of just how systemic child sexual abuse is covered up by the legal system in Scotland. Lord Boyd's judgment is also significant for this reason. This presents a picture of exactly how Dunlop operates to spin in favour of Lady Smith, to twist the blatantly unlawful into something statable, acceptable, and to cover up self-evident disability discrimination perpetrated on a fellow member of the Faculty of Advocates when he was at his weakest and most vulnerable with cancer. Dunlop has continued to do this on Lady Smith's behalf, formally in court, formally out of court by abusing his own disciplinary powers as dean, and informally out of court by keeping those wheels of corruption well-oiled and in operation in meetings, collaborations, and on social media. So much so that I've raised ET proceedings against Dunlop, the first advocate to have sued the Dean, I believe. I understand he's quite sensitive about that. What an utter disgrace. His response? The Equality Act 2010 doesn't prevent Dunlop from victimising members of faculty. Lord Boyd's judgment is also an excellent summary of the completed othering of me. If you read it, it reads as if I have no rights to assert, nor any interest to protect in the proceedings. In relation to my cancer, which is automatically classified as a disability under the Equality Act 2010, and to Lady Smith's blatant and unapologetic, ignorant and cruel disability discrimination towards me. Othering. Reading Lord Boyd's judgment. You'd be thinking to yourself, what's Halley complaining about? He's so unreasonable and disregards the interests of the survivors of child sexual abuse. He must be wrong. No right-thinking person would agree with Halley. Equals complete othering. The BBC appealed against Lord Boyd's judgment successfully. Now you might be saying to yourself, good, that demonstrates integrity in the legal system in Scotland. Not so. You'd be wrong. It requires special skills to allow an appeal and preserve the underlying corruption. Very deceptive. It makes the impartial observer think everything's okay and the system must be working well. All shrouded in the obscure language of the law. That's another layer of protection for the cover-up. The appeal judgment takes the othering of Halley to a new and elevated level. The appeal judgment was delivered by the Lord President, Lord Carlaway, on 23rd of February 2022. He heard the BBC's appeal together with Lords Pentland and Woolman. The BBC's news item can be found online, reporting it. The judgment can be found on the Scottish Court's website. The first news of it came to me out of the blue in a text from the Scottish newspaper journalist for The Scotsman at the time, Conor Matchett. I had no idea the appeal had been heard that my name and my disability, my cancer, were going to feature in a public document, published on a website by the Inner House of the Court of Session in Scotland. You see, I had no rights. I mothered. Other people have rights. I don't. I can be discussed in Scotland's highest court, and I don't even have a right to be told it's happening. How would you like that? Do you think that's fair or remotely acceptable? By Lord Carloway, who's unaccountable to anyone for his actions. I'd been put in touch with Matchett by Russell Findlay, MSP, about the note. The tenor of Matchett's text was to effect that he was an experienced reader of court judgments and opinions, but even he couldn't decipher the obscurity of the detail and the reasoning in this judgment. He had no real idea what the substance of the issues it sought to address was. Open justice? On both counts, the personal aspect for me and the comprehensibility aspect for Matchett and lesser morals. I've tried to explain to Matchett that it was important and what it was about. I've literally never heard from Matchett again. A familiar pattern of experience with journalists in Scotland in relation to this material. I don't know why. The Inner House judgment was suspiciously underreported. Maybe they didn't understand it. Maybe it's something else. The appeal was decided on a very simple approach. Paragraphs 39 to 41 detail that the simple, straightforward, ordinary meaning of the words used in Section 19 of the Inquiries Act 2005 make it clear that restriction orders can only apply to matters falling within an inquiry's terms of reference, i.e. in this case, the investigation into child sexual abuse in Scotland. Now, common sense tells you that it's difficult to make an honest mistake about interpreting and applying that approach, particularly if you have at your disposal a large team of publicly funded lawyers and the Dean of Faculty. Yet the honest mistake explanation is Lady Smith's continuing position. What do you think? And Lord Carloway did his best to cover up for Lady Smith in the remaining obiter supportive comments made about her efforts and her approach. Well, where's the evidence for that? Show the public the data supporting claims about Lady Smith's success and what a good job she's doing in the SCAI. Absolutely nothing about her blatant, outrageous and cruel disability discrimination towards me when I was seriously ill with cancer. My rights are completely left out of account, as are my rights to be heard or even to be informed about and participate in public court proceedings, engaging my privacy and interests, my cancer. This is utterly shameful and to be condemned in the strongest possible terms. Othering at the highest level in Scotland.